Now on Radio 4, a new series of the Environmental Programme, for which you set the agenda. Here's Richard Daniel.
Hello and welcome to Home Planet, the programme in which we tackle your questions and concerns about our environment and the natural world. Today you ask, is shipping gas around the world in huge tankers sustainable or even safe? Well, joining me to discuss these and other questions are Dr. Ros Taylor from Kingston University, Dr. Nick Riley from the British Geological Survey, and the biogeographer Professor Philip Stott from the University of London. Welcome along to all of you. We start today with liquefied natural gas, not the stuff that comes into the UK via undersea pipelines from places like Russia, but gas that is cooled so it becomes liquid and is then transported around the globe in supertankers. British companies like BP and British Gas are heavily involved in producing liquefied natural gas, or LNG as it's known, around the world. The UK at the moment represents a very small market, but it's a growing one, and processing facilities have been opened up on the Isle of Grain in Kent. Two are also due to open soon in Milford Haven, and one's planned for Teesside. Christopher Jessop is a Home Planet listener. He lives near Milford Haven, where local people are worried about the import of LNG and how it's handled. But Chris emailed home.planet@bbc.co.uk with a more global concern. He's on the telephone now. Christopher.
Liquefying natural gas, transporting it and revaporising it is energy intensive. Effectively, only 70% of the gas extracted at the wellhead remains by the time it enters our gas mains. The rest would have been burnt on our behalf, releasing carbon dioxide. Some people will argue that carbon dioxide emissions from the LNG processes are offshore and therefore nothing to do with us. But surely this is disingenuous. If we didn't want that gas, it would stay in the ground. I propose that because there is such an energy penalty incurred during the LNG supply chain, LNG should be classed not as a primary fuel, but as a secondary energy source, like electricity. This would require the UK's natural gas carbon emission factor to be steadily adjusted upwards in future years as we become increasingly dependent on LNG imports. Could the programme please look into this?
We certainly can, Christopher. Thank you very much for that. Well, Philip, can you just explain, Philip Stott, what LNG is, first of all?
Certainly, Richard. LNG is natural gas that has been processed to remove the impurities and the heavy hydrocarbons, and it's then condensed into a liquid at atmospheric pressure. Now, when it comes out of the ground, natural gas is between 80 to 95% methane, but it also contains ethane, propane and butane, as well as sometimes water vapour, hydrogen sulfide, carbon dioxide, helium and nitrogen. Now, when purified, it functions quite close to methane, which liquefies below its boiling point of minus 161.6 degrees C or minus 258.9 degrees F. And it is a boiling point. It's an extraordinary thought, isn't it, this minus figure. Now, the liquid form occupies only 1/640th of the volume of the gas at standard pressure and temperature, hence why it becomes highly efficient to transport LNG in specially designed tanks in that form.
Are we freezing it then? I know you said that was the boiling
point.
We're
liquefying it. It's just below the boiling point where, of course, it's going to turn from a gas to a liquid.
But we have to chill it to get there.
You've got to chill it. You've got to condense it to get to that very low boiling point.
Nick Riley, where are the sources of gas that we are liquefying then?
They tend to be gas deposits under the ground that accumulated near coastlines, because the way you transport LNG is mainly by ship. And so those are the favoured locations, and particularly in Southeast Asia and the Middle East. It's going to be produced from Australia, from the giant Gorgon field, and also it's coming onto production in Norway from the Snøhvit field. Gas fields which are nowhere near a pipeline infrastructure, so they're in many senses a stranded resource, and it's only by liquefying them into this LNG and then transporting them by ship they can actually get to a market.
Philip Stott, globally, Japan a big user, Korea, I believe, as well. And,
of course,
the producers have their eye on the US market.
Very much so, indeed. As the prices change, of course, for oil, that is going to be a big market.
Nick Riley, that will surely transform the business, will it not, if the US starts importing LNG?
It certainly will, and we're going to see a rapid growth in LNG over the next decade or so. And the US has very poor indigenous gas resources, so it has to import energy. Japan also is the same. 95% of the gas imports into Japan are LNG. And the UK now is getting very import dependent. We're going to see a 22% increase in consumption of gas in this country over the next 10 years. And we're certainly going to see LNG occupying about 10% of that import.
And this is because of the declining role of nuclear, for example, in our energy mix?
Partly that. There is a change, obviously, in the there is yet to see how things pan out with electricity generation over the next 10 years. But clearly, if nuclear goes down, then there'll have to be more coal or more gas or more renewables to replace that capacity.
Now, how sustainable will this supply be? Because Christopher has mentioned there is a huge energy penalty, if you like, in the production of LNG. It's very energy intensive.
Absolutely, Richard. And Christopher is quite correct, because the production and the purification processes are not included in any figures to do with emissions or energy production in the UK. In other words, all those figures that Christopher mentioned, all those processes are not included in the British CO2 figures.
I still want to also look at the cost, Nick Riley, the cost, the energy penalty of this.
Well, it's
Christopher
improved.
Was implying, yes. What, 70%?
I think he certainly would have been true with that figure around about 10 years ago, when about for every 3 tonnes of LNG you were producing, about 1 tonne of CO2 was emitted. It's now a ratio of about 5 tonnes of LNG to 1 tonne of CO2. And this is one of the reasons why LNG has become more economic, because they've improved the efficiency of these big compression trains which compress and cool the gas down.
But this penalty, to be clear, is at the wellhead, where it is being extracted and liquefied.
It's at the wellhead and the gas processing plant. There are other issues too, in that many of these LNG gas producing reservoirs actually have high CO2 contents anyway. And for instance, the giant Gorgon field, which is hopefully coming on stream, has a lot of CO2 in the gas, and that has to be separated out and injected down. So there are possibilities for removing the CO2 from these LNG trains at these particular sites where they're already having to re-inject CO2 down under the ground. And Snøhvit's another possibility.
Of course, rather than putting the gas into a pipeline, we're putting it onto a super tanker. So there's a cost there as well, you know, in terms of transport.
There's about, on average, about 2% of the cargo. It's the actual cargo itself which powers the ship. About 2% of the cargo on average is lost during transportation. But compared to other shipping, ship's bunker fuel, burning LNG in the turbines of the ship is much cleaner way of powering a ship than bunker fuel.
Absolutely. I think that's quite important to stress. But there is another environmental problem, because one of the processes of cooling, and you mentioned earlier, Richard, that we have to cooling, is called the open rack vaporization system, which uses 200 million gallons of seawater. And there are genuine environmental problems and worries about that seawater going back into areas like the Gulf of Texas, for example.
Now, we've already touched, haven't we, on this business of whether the CO2 emissions that result from the production of LNG are counted into our domestic balance. You've alluded, Philip.
They're not.
No. Rods Taylor, what do you make of that?
Well, no, they're not included, but then this, of course, also applies to many other commodities that we use. So in that respect, it's not unusual. And I think it opens a much bigger question that we need to think very carefully about what the implications are about just working out our CO2 balance at home.
Does it not make a mockery when we say, right, we're in line with the Kyoto Protocol, our CO2 emissions are in line, when actually we're responsible for generating these emissions offshore, elsewhere?
Well, to some extent it does, because clearly those countries may have a penalty in that they may produce high emissions of CO2 from which we are benefiting. Depends indeed what they can do about that. On the other hand, they benefit from our trade, so that becomes a social question for us to consider as well.
But there is a technical problem, because most of the countries that are producing don't give any figures internationally at all. In fact, one or two of them have only given one report. So in other words, we don't even have them counted here. They're not counted at all.
The point, though, surely, Ross Taylor, is that we are producing less and less in production, industrial production in this company, saying our CO2 emissions are in line. Well, the fact is, our emissions are being done by somebody else. So, you know, where we buy a car from, perhaps. If we buy a car that's made in Japan, well, the emissions are there, but we're buying it.
Yeah, well, you're looking at the whole supply chain here, and I would agree. Indeed, we should be looking at the whole supply chain and perhaps taking responsibility. But this, as you say, with reference to a car, is a much bigger question than just looking at LNG.
And finally, Nick Riley, is transporting all this gas in supertankers around the globe safe?
Well, all I can say is the statistics are very favourable. There have been over 33,000 transits by ship of LNG tankers, and that amounts to over 60 million miles of travelling, and there's been no serious incident, to my knowledge, from any of those ships. So You can never say something is absolutely safe, but that statistic suggests the risk is extremely low.
Well, Christopher Jessop is still on the line. Christopher, what do you make of what you've heard?
Well, I think your contributors have painted a very accurate picture and gone into reasonable depth in what the problem is. But I think the point about LNG is we are going to be burning so much of this gas, so many millions of tons, and a lot of that gas is going into secondary energy production, it's going into electricity, being converted into electricity with more losses. And I think we really, because we're talking about such an increase in carbon dioxide emissions offshore, that really this is something which needs taking in front of the politicians and asking them, not just our politicians, but all Western politicians, to say, yes, we've got to own up to this, because it's the world's carbon dioxide.
Christopher, let's just put that point to Nick Riley. If it becomes a major energy source for us, he's got a point, isn't he?
He has, and with the present technologies that are deployed, but you've got to remember that methane, which is mainly what LNG is made of, is the main source for hydrogen, and there is already at Peterhead planned a hydrogen-burning power station, which is deriving its hydrogen from methane, and the CO2 from the hydrogen production is put back out under the ground under the North Sea. So we can change our energy system to use gas in a very sustainable way. The economic drivers are there, and that all goes back to emissions tradings and targets, etc.
Christopher, thank you very much indeed for your question. Now, don't forget, if you want to add to anything or take issue with anything you hear today, do get in touch. You're listening to Home Planet on Radio 4. Now, don't forget our website, where you can find more information on some of today's topics, useful links as well. Log on to bbc.co.uk/radio4/homeplanet.